Senator John Tester's Forest Jobs and Recreation Bill clears a key committee hurdle. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
In our ongoing series on the Bakken, Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us about some businesses succeeding there that aren't related to oil. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with champion freestyle mogul skier Heather McPhee about her hopes to make it to the Sochi Olympics. A bill by Senator John Tester to expand wilderness and mandate more logging on federal lands has passed its first test. The Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources voted today to move the bill to the full Senate. The approval comes despite opposition by Republicans on the committee. The measure designates 640,000 acres of forest as permanent wilderness, while calling for logging on 100,000 acres. Republican Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski says that is not a fair trade. Tester says Murkowski's numbers were off.
Well, she was combining the recreational acreage with the wilderness, and the wilderness acreage was reduced. It's down to about 640 now, and the recreation area was, I think, around 300 plus. So those numbers weren't quite right. The other thing is this. We're going to log 100,000 acres of trees. That's going to be incredible supply for those mills, and you can't log every acre. This is a pilot program. And quite frankly, if we get 100,000 acres of federal forest lands for these mills to log, it's going to set them up in pretty darn good shape.
Tester introduced the bill during his first term in 2009, touting it as a compromise between environmentalists and loggers. Tester also expressed optimism during his telephone press conference today that a farm bill agreement is close at hand.
Well, it was very, very close to being worked out right now. I think if the House would have stayed in another week, we'd have had a farm bill. From what I've heard, the farm bill is going to save some money. The one that came out of the Senate was $20-plus billion in savings. The House is going to be out for 25 days over Christmas and New Year's. That's their schedule, and I don't have a problem with it, except for the fact that it would have been good to have a farm bill for certainty's sake coming through here. I apologize to some of the grain growers because I spoke to their convention a couple weeks ago, and I said, we'll have a farm bill by the middle of December. Little did I know that it wasn't going to happen. It's unfortunate, but we are where we are, and I do think we should. Oh, I hate to make these predictions. I think we'll have one very soon in January.
Tester described the two-year budget deal passed this week as a compromise and not perfect, but, as he put it, quote, pretty darn good, end quote. Tester notes there are portions of the measure he's not happy about. One of them trims annual cost of living increases and benefits for certain military retirees.
That doesn't kick in until December 1, 2015. Both Chairman Levin, Chairman of the Armed Services, and former ranking member McCain have said they're going to deal with this. And if you combine this with the fact that there's going to be a commission coming out with a report on pay and retirement of our military in May, because pay and retirement takes up about 43% of our military dollars right now, and that's pretty darn high, we're going to be able to address this long, long, long before December 1, 2015 for those military folks. Even though I had some issues with the reduction in the cost of living increase, I thought the sequestration that's applied to the military would have far more devastating effects than a reduction in the increase of the cost of living.
Tester declined to speak in depth today about speculation that Senator Max Baucus may be nominated to serve as ambassador to China, but he did describe his colleague as a tremendous servant for the people of Montana. Tester added Baucus will be successful at whatever happens next in his life.
And in other news from around the state, it will be up to Governor Steve Bullock to appoint a replacement to serve the rest of U.S. Senator Max Baucus' term if Baucus steps down to become the next ambassador to China. How that appointment might affect next year's election for that seat is already the subject of speculation in political circles around the state. Democratic officials say Baucus is expected to be nominated by President Barack Obama as ambassador to China. Baucus already has said he does not plan to run for re-election. Bullock Chief of Staff Kevin O'Brien declined to comment on who the governor might be considering. Bullock has already endorsed his Lieutenant Governor John Walsh in the 2014 election. Montana Republican Party Executive Director Bowen Greenwood says any appointment should be open, transparent, and fair.
Montana Attorney General Tim Fox has approved the board of New State Health Foundation. The Montana Healthcare Foundation was established following the sale of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana to an out-of-state company. State law requires the proceeds from that sale go toward a broad goal of improving health care in the state. And that's about as specific as it gets. The Board of Trustees will eventually need to decide what to do with the $40 million from the sale. A group of interim trustees submitted a list of 7 nominees at Attorney General Fox earlier this month. Fox says the nominees have met state requirements and passed background checks. Fox says the board will have a lot of responsibility as there are many health care needs in the state.
It's a pretty tall order to figure out where the money should go, and I think these folks will do a great job in making sure that Montanans are well served.
Fox says the board held its first official meeting today. The foundation could eventually receive another $100 million or more as additional Blue Cross assets are sold off, on top of the $40 million the foundation already has.
Missoula County Commissioners have appointed Andrew Person to fill the State House District 98 legislative seat left open by former Representative Jennifer Gursky's resignation. The Missoulian Report's commissioners were unanimous Tuesday in their selection of Person, who was a Democrat. Person's application says he is a 34-year-old Helena native and a student at the University of Montana School of Law, expected to graduate next year. He is a military veteran with a master's degree in foreign service from Georgetown University. Person listed his legislative priorities as fighting against political groups funded by anonymous donors and supporting clean energy. Gursky resigned the legislative seat in October to move to Helena and become the development director of Helena Food Share.
Former State Judge Susan Waters has been sworn in as Montana's first female U.S. District Court judge. U.S. District Judge Donald Malloy swore in the 55-year-old Billings native in a ceremony today at the federal courthouse, attended by several dozen friends, colleagues, and family members. Waters worked in private practice and as a prosecutor before becoming a state judge 15 years ago. She fills a vacancy on the federal bench created with the retirement of U.S. District Judge Richard Siebel. Other federal judges had been forced to travel to Billings to fill the gap. Malloy welcomes Waters as a, quote, remarkably excellent, end quote, judge who was sorely needed to help handle the court's workload. Waters says she has already begun reviewing cases.
In small Montana towns, the opening of a new grocery store can be a pretty big deal. That's still the case in the eastern Montana town of Sidney. Sidney and other towns surrounding the Bakken boom are seeing rapid growth. And it's not just grocery stores. Businesses of all kinds are benefiting from the influx of new people following the oil. This evening, we continue our series on side effects of the Bakken. Capital reporter Dan Boyce looks at some non-oil businesses thriving in an oil economy, as well as some people losing out.
Reynolds Market. It's been operating since 1925 in Sydney.
23. Have a good evening.
And it has just moved to a brand new spot about a mile away from the old place.
Basically, twice as big as we were at our old location.
Shannon Miller, she's the frozen foods manager here.
We've got new departments. We've got a floral department, a bakery department now, and a deli.
The store has a bright, open floor plan with colorful walls and a high ceiling. 81-year-old Marvelie Fink has been coming here for decades.
I know a lot of people are wondering, what are we going to do on the other side of town? But I think they'll like it. It's worth the drive out here.
Lucky for her, the store moved a mile closer to her house. Reynolds' old location just wasn't meeting the demand from the new oil population. Moving to the new spot, the store initially increased from about 60 employees to 100. Managers quickly found out that wasn't enough and hired 40 more people. This kind of expansion is being felt all over the Bakken. Republican State Representative Austin Knutson lives in Culbertson, about 40 minutes north of Sydney.
There's certainly a diversity of things going on out here. It's not just oil driving the economy out here at this point.
Tiny Culbertson has had two little motels as long as Knutson can remember.
And here we've got a brand new extended stay that just opened its doors.
Not too far from the new Napa Auto Parts or the Fracking Java Coffee Shack.
And what do you like, everything on your burritos? They come with onion, cilantro, cheese, rice, and beans.
We're all involved. We all help out.
Vanessa Torres says her 8-member family moved to Sydney from Las Vegas 3 years ago to open up a taco truck. She says it's always been her dad's dream to own a restaurant. She translates.
We have a lot of customers and they actually do like the Mexican food here.
Those with something to sell can charge more here than in surrounding areas. The gas is more expensive. No hotel room in town goes for less than $90-some dollars a night. Landlords can charge $1,000 a month to rent an apartment, $2,000. This is good for landlords, good for business owners. Well, not all of them. Back at Reynolds Grocery Store now, Jennifer McGann works as a cashier. I ask her about the kinds of businesses doing well because of oil. She says there's something else I should be asking.
You should be asking about all the businesses that have closed because the landlords raised their rent so high that they can't afford to stay in business anymore.
Some shops that have been open for decades.
One is the Beanbag. It was a coffee house.
She says other places are closing because they can't pay workers enough anymore.
Nobody's going to work for $11, $12 an hour.
As for herself, McGann likes working at Reynolds. She says they treat their employees well. But she's not having an easy time either.
It's a tight squeeze.
Remember our longtime Reynolds shopper, Marvelee Fink?
It's worth the drive out here.
She's at the store tonight buying boxes of ramen noodles to give to the food bank.
I talked to a lady from the food bank that said there are older people come in and they have to choose between money for medicine or groceries.
It turns out the local food bank is another place with increasing demand. I'm Dan Boyce reporting in Sydney.
You can see the other stories in our series on Bakken spinoffs on our website. That's mtpr.org.
Montana environmental officials are backing the expansion of a gold mine near Whitehall that would allow its operations to continue for another 2 years. An environmental study released by the state on Thursday proposes allowing the Golden Sunlight Mine to expand one mining pit and add a new one. A final decision is due in January. Department of Environmental Quality Director Tracy Stonemanning says the agency's recommended permit conditions will make sure polluted water can be captured. The change to the mine's 1972 permit would allow the mine to continue operating until 2017. That's 2 years beyond prior projections. The mine, owned by Barrick Gold Corporation of Canada, announced some buyouts last month that will receive it with 193 employees.
Among the Montanans hoping to make it to the Sochi Olympics this winter is Bozeman native and reigning national freestyle mogul ski champion Heather McPhee. It would be McPhee's second Olympics. She placed 18th in Vancouver in 2010. This year's team will be picked in January. McPhee is back in Bozeman for the holidays after competing in a World Cup event in Finland. The 29-year-old took time out of her training to speak with news director Sally Mock about her skiing career. It's a sport that's in her blood, beginning with her great-grandfather.
My great-grandfather helped found West Yellowstone, and he would deliver the mail on skis and ski into the park. And both of my grandparents are really into skiing. My grandfather, Wally, was instrumental in helping get Bridger Bowl going, and we skied as a family every year at Big Sky during the holidays. And so I just grew up in a ski family. My mom skied with me when she was pregnant with me. She skied, and as soon as I was out into the world, they would take me in the backpack because I have two older siblings who love to ski as well. And my dad's parents actually started two small ski resorts that are no longer around, but in Utah, where he grew up in the Salt Lake area. So it's a huge part of my family.
You started skiing competitively, I think, when you were around 12, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was at Bridger?
It was, yeah. I joined the Bridger Freestyle Ski Team with Mike Papke, and I trained with him for 8 years.
And learned all the essential fundamentals for competitive skiing. Of course, you could pick any sort of category, but how did you pick freestyle moguls? Why does that appeal to you?
You know, it's sort of a funny story. One, we would ski at Big Sky as a family a lot, and there's a run there called Mad Wolf. And it's just a full run of moguls. And I always loved it. My friend Tyler and I would go up there, and we would just beg our parents to take us down there one more time. And then we'd ask them again and ask them again and totally wear them out. So I always loved mogul skiing. I was a gymnast, and that was 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. So when I was done with gymnastics, I think my parents both kind of didn't really know what to do with me. I hadn't done a whole lot of other sports, and all of a sudden I had a lot of free time. And they thought that I would really like aerials, but they don't have an aerial program here. So they signed me up for moguls, and I'm so glad they did, because I just absolutely love to ski. And I was terrible at it at first. I was really scared of jumping. and actually went around the airs for the whole first year, where now jumping is really my strong suit and what I'm known for in the sport, so it's sort of ironic.
And what caused that change? How did you overcome your fear?
I think it was, you know, systematically just really working on it. Mike Papke was an incredibly patient coach. He also, I remember, he finally made me go bigger by he and one other coach standing in the transition of the jump and saying, well, you're going to have to go straight or you're going to hit us. And so I finally, I think, they chopped the landing, and I finally made the chop. I went big enough to land on the chop and realized that it felt much better to go bigger. But then also, they allowed inverted tricks in 2003, and I love flipping. That's when my gymnastics, I think, really kind of kicked in, benefiting me in the sport. And as soon as I could go upside down, I started jumping much better.
In 2010, you qualified for the Vancouver Olympics, and that was a surprise. You really weren't expecting to make the team then, right?
Right. It was really a fairy tale season for me. I finished 2009 unfunded on the North American Tour Series instead of the World Cup, and I didn't have World Cup starts heading into the Olympic year, and you qualify by the World Cup. So I was pretty disappointed at the end of the 2009 season. I was stressed financially, and I wasn't enjoying myself very much. I was letting myself just be way too stressed and take it really seriously. And I started working with a mental strength coach, which helped a lot. I decided in May of 2009, it sounds sort of cheesy, but I realized that I had never really believed in myself fully. I had always said, I will get there someday if I just keep working. I was always willing to work hard, but I wasn't really believing in myself and performing to my abilities. So I made this commitment in May that I would just believe in myself. I started every workout saying, I believe. I pushed into every single course training saying the same thing. I had a necklace that had believe on it as a reminder. And I went from 27th to second in the world in less than 2 months. So it was this amazing fairy tale in 2010.
And confidence is a huge part of your sport, or of any sport at an elite level. You have to believe, right?
Yeah, you really do. I think that by the time you get to this level, there's a lot of people with very similar skills. We've all worked hard. We're all physically fit. And it really comes down to your mental game, I believe.
In 2010, you were in third place heading into the final. And tell me what happened on that last run.
Man, it was devastating. It was a really hard experience for me. I mean, how can you complain about going to the Olympics? It was incredible, and it was such an honor to be there, and I still get goosebumps talking about it, thinking about walking into opening ceremonies and just the impact and the power of the Olympics. It's incredible. But my coach and I had decided that no matter what, I was going to go for it. And at that point, I was sort of, you know, borderline top five, can podium if I'm pushing myself a little beyond my comfort zone. So I really went for it. Honestly, it's one of the best runs of my life still until that bottom air. I skied so fast. I was in such great control at a higher speed than I'm used to, and I had no idea how big I was going. So I hit that bottom air, and I don't want to say too big because I don't really believe in that, but for how I set my rotation, I went too big, and I crashed on my back flip. So I'm really proud of myself for going for it. I left nothing on the table that day, but it was disappointing for sure, and I felt like I let a lot of people down, which I know everybody says is not the case, but I felt that way.
That's the fine line, isn't it, is how far to push and knowing when to push the limit. That really separates the winners from the losers often, and it's a very fine line, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And, you know, I have very few regrets in my career. The runs that I end up regretting in competition are the ones that I accidentally held back. I feel like if you qualify for the Olympics, at the very most, between both of your competition runs, because there was two runs during the 2010 games, now there's several more runs, but it's less than 1 minute of your life. And you've trained so hard. And for me, I look at it as, how do I not go for it? That's the whole thing that inspires me when I watch other Olympians at the games from any country. It's that you bring together the world to celebrate human potential and to really see people on the edge of their abilities. And that's what I believe in. That's what pushes me in the sport. So maybe it's probably one of my greatest strengths and can be a weakness as well, that I am incredibly passionate about what I do. And I don't back down.
You're known for what's called a D-spin. Tell our listeners what that is.
So a D-spin is an off-axis 720. So it's Johnny Mosley really made it popular in the 2002 Olympics, and it's one where you take off and you end up horizontal to the ground for the apex of the trick. It's so much fun, and you can really kind of, you can, because you're tucking your knees in, you can go pretty big and adjust your air really pretty well.
I hear that you wear a Montana belt buckle.
I do, yes. So I actually, the last year that I was in the Northern Division, I won the overall for the women, and I got a belt buckle. And I have skied with it every single day since. And then after the 2010 Olympics, one of my coaches hand tools leather belts, and he made me a belt that has the Made in Montana logo on it and the Olympic rings and my nickname, McFly. And I'm so proud of where I'm from. I feel like it's a really unique and amazing place, and it helps me a lot to carry it with me.
You mentioned earlier how important the Olympic experience is, and you said, quote, how amazing it feels to be a part of something so positive in this world.
Yeah, and I think that as much as I feel like there's a patriotic pride within individual countries, and you do the medal count per country and all of that, which I do think is great. That's a powerful experience in itself. But another thing that I love about the Olympics is the thought of the whole world, right? That you can watch an athlete from any country and you see them on, you know, really in that zone or that flow state, whatever you call it, and you watch this amazing moment in their lives. And it's something that it's hard to even define, but for me at least, it lights this spark in me that I carry into other things, that kind of all walks of life. It just brings you this joy of seeing someone work and push so hard and achieve this art form, basically, in their sport.
Well, we certainly here in Montana hope we get to see you do your art form in Sochi. I have been speaking with Heather McPhee, who's the National Freestyle Mogul Ski Champion and hoping to head to the Sochi Olympics this winter. Heather, just a pleasure to talk with you about your sport and your passion for it, and just wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time and helping spread the word, and I love the support.
Ski champion Heather McPhee will sign posters from 3 to 6 p.m. tomorrow at Bozeman Audi, and this Saturday from 1 to 3:30 at the Big Sky Life Bozeman Audi dealership in Big Sky. Also that evening from 4:30 to 7, she will be doing a fundraiser at Big Sky Resort, with part of the proceeds going to Eagle Mount and Big Sky Youth Empowerment.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be partly cloudy with lows 0 to 7 degrees above. Tomorrow, snow is likely with highs in the 20s. For central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and areas of fog and blowing snow after midnight with lows 10 below to 5 above zero. Along the Rocky Mountain front, expect wind gusts up to 55 miles per hour. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with areas of blowing snow through the day and highs in the 20s. Wind gusts could be up to 50 miles per hour. Southwest Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows 5 below to 0. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with highs 15 to 25 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Evan Barrett.
I ended my commentary last month this way. Here's hoping that the onset of Christmas will result in some Christian values rising up in that millionaire class that we call Congress, so that we might, by year's end, see the minimum wage go up. But I wouldn't bet on it. Well, here it is, almost Christmas, and so far, zippo from Congress. At a time when Time magazine named Pope Francis as Person of the Year, based on some of his concern for those in poverty, you'd think Congress would have done something on the minimum wage and other similar issues. For after all, as the Pope has noted, and I quote, the trickle-down promise was that when the glass was full, it would overflow, benefiting the poor. But what happens instead is that, and this is the Pope speaking, when the glass is full, it magically gets bigger. Nothing ever comes out for the poor. In the face of that reality, Tea Party conservatives in Congress have compounded their minimum wage affront to the working poor by slamming them two more times on food stamps and on unemployment benefit extensions. Bottom line, if the Tea Party conservatives in Congress were Santa Claus, they would be delivering three lumps of coal to those striving to struggle out of the poverty here in America. What drives them to this heartless and economically damaging position? A different but perceptive social thinker, the late comedian George Carlin, readily puts his finger on it when he said, "Conservatives say if you don't give the rich more money, they will lose their incentive to invest. As for the poor, conservatives tell us, they've lost all incentive because we've given them too much money." Close quote. Yes, George Carlin nailed it just as clearly as Pope Francis has. Tea Party congressional conservatives appear to believe that the working poor, in fact, anyone who is poor, is that way because they either want to be poor or are too lazy to work their way to prosperity. Common sense Montanans know better. We know that almost everyone believes in the American dream. They would not only like a job, they'd like a better job, one that could lift them and their family out of poverty. That's one reason a significant increase in the minimum wage is indeed needed in America. But let's get back to the other two lumps of coal, food stamps and unemployment benefits. Because of inaction by Congress, especially the Tea Party-dominated House, on December 28th, 1.3 million American families will be kicked off extended unemployment benefits. These are people who are seeking work. That's a requirement. But fine, there are 3 to 4 unemployed seeking every job that's out there. And by the end of 2014, another 3.6 million will lose their benefits. Remember, we have long-term unemployment problems because we have yet to fully recover from the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. In past recessions, extended unemployment benefits ended when the long-term unemployed represented about 1.3% of the workforce. Today, the long-term jobless still represent more than 2% of the labor force. So this is still not a time to drop these benefit extensions, given the economic reality of not enough jobs. But also, because those benefits sustain families at a time of stress and also help stimulate the economy by being immediately spent on Main Street USA. Those unemployment benefit extensions are both a moral imperative and an economic imperative. But what do we hear from Santa Congress's elves about this? Elf number one, Rand Paul, says that if you extend unemployment benefits, quote, you do a disservice to the poor, close quote. Elf number two, Paul Ryan, still advances a so-called fair budget that does nothing on the issue. Elf number three, Ted Cruz, well, he votes against anything and everything that helps the struggling people. And so on for all the little elves. Here, enjoy this lump of coal for Christmas, is what they get. As for food stamps, a September Census Bureau report found that food stamps had kept nearly 4 million people above the poverty level and had stopped millions more from sinking further into poverty. So the House, led by another of the elves, Eric Cantor, responded by cutting $40 billion from food stamps while continuing to refuse to ask billionaires to provide one additional penny to support such programs. The food stamp cuts fall disproportionately on children, by the way. But what the heck? A lump of coal will help build character. All the while, Congressional Santa and his Tea Party conservative elves have yet to spend any time crafting a jobs bill for America, refusing even the modest one proposed by the president. But then, a jobs bill would be a real gift for Christmas, not another of their lumps of coal. So for Christmas this year, it's three lumps of coal and a hearty ho-ho-ho from the Tea Party conservative Santa. This is Evan Barrett in Butte, thinking of the working poor in this time of Christmas.
Evan Barrett is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.